Down at Third Man, the cricket podcast, talking all things cricket, from club cricket to million-pound franchises to the Test Match Arena, proudly supported by Woodstock Cricket.
Welcome to the Down at Third Man podcast. Just a quick note to say we did have a few technical difficulties while recording this episode. I think everyone's Wi-Fi decided to take a little bit of a walk down the road and rolled in some shit. So there is a few technical difficulties, so there might be a few bits that maybe don't sound perfect. So we can only apologise for that, but clearly Stoke-on-Trent hasn't quite managed to get the best Wi-Fi in the world. Obviously, in this episode, you'll hear that we've got Dan on with us from Port Hill, talking about the Nathan Butler Memorial Day that they'll be holding back end of this month, probably 29th of August it should be. Please go and support that. If you want any more info, ask us or ask Dan. But yeah, please show your support to that great cause. And again, we apologise for any technical difficulties you might notice during the podcast. Anyway, enjoy.
Hi, and welcome to the Down at Third Man podcast. I thought I'd give Ash a rest this week. Welcome to episode 29, Double D, Dan and the Draw. Lalo's busy sunning himself on holiday in what is hopefully a sunny York, so we wish him well. 2 weeks in a row there, we will remind him of that. But we're very, very lucky to have a more than capable stand-in in Dan Hancock joining me and Ash this week. So Dan, big welcome on.
Thanks, lads, thanks for having me on, much appreciated.
The second in the Hancock family, Dan, to be on. Yeah. You got to live up to after your brother's performance.
Yeah, that quick fire round's definitely got a lot to live up to. He copped a bit of stick for that, so hopefully I can improve on that if that's in the pipeline.
Or the not so quick fire round.
Yeah.
Kind of like got established for the couple of weeks after that.
Yeah.
So we've got lots to talk about England wise, selection wise, first test wise. We're going to have a chat to Dan about his North Stash cricket journey. On the playing side, and also what he gets himself involved to nowadays. Then we're going to have a chat about England a little bit later on. Hopefully you can stick around for that bit, Dan. I'd love to know your thoughts on some of that. Yeah. And then we're going to finish off with just a little bit of information about a cry day we've got coming up for the Nathan Butler Memorial Day, I think. All right. So that's the plan of action for tonight. Ash hasn't gone anywhere. He's just resting his vocal cords for 5 minutes. He is well, as I promise. So you've got my dulcet tones leading tonight. But firstly, as we always start, we'd just like to say a big thank you to our sponsors, Woodstock Cricket. And just remember that you can go online, use our voucher code, use our discount code and get yourself the best rated kit officially on the market today. So, Dan, let's crack straight into it, mate. Why don't we?
Okay.
We are, believe it or not, 11 years post Little Stoke into your Port Hill tenure. I've done me digging. Talk us through your North Staff's cricket journey.
Okay. I actually started at Whitmore as a junior. Played all my junior cricket at Whitmore, and that was back in the senior A and senior B days, which I don't know if you two are old, young enough to remember, but played a lot of cricket for Whitmore and then moved to Little Stoke. I think it was 2007, I think, maybe 2006. Rob Hayden and Rich Harvey were the guys in charge at Little Stoke, and Rich Harvey was staff's captain at the time, and I had ambitions to sort of break into the staff's team, so it seemed a pretty good fit. So I ended up going to Little Stoke in Div 1, so it's quite a big leap really from Senior B and Senior A at the time to Division 1, and we ended up winning Division 1 2 years later. So that was a good thing for the club. And then two, maybe 3 years later after that, we'd sort of established ourselves in the Prem, and we managed to win the Prem in 2010, I think.
Something like that.
And following that, the season after, we all jumped ship and ended up at Port Hill. It wasn't quite like that. It was in the pipeline really for a few years really at Port Hill. All my friends play there. I was in the centre at the time. And I just thought it was probably the right time to make the move. Went there as vice captain under Neil Alsmore, who was a brilliant bloke. And then, yeah, that was, I've been at Port Hill ever since.
I think we can describe the tenure. I mean, that's a successful start to the senior Prem cricket career anyway. going from promotion to winning the league anyway. But I think we can probably describe the Hancock tenure at Port Hill from brother to brother as one of the more successful local cricket. So talk us through, I don't know, can we call it a dynasty, a local cricket dynasty?
I wouldn't quite go that far. I think John's tenure has been definitely more successful than mine, so I better get one straight. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it's flattering for you to say that, but for me, it was a bit of a process when I first took over because the team I was playing for, I was playing with at the time, as I say, Neil Elsmore was captain. That team was sort of coming to the end of a cycle. We had guys like Dave Cotton, Matt Hole, Neil Elsmore, Simon Cork, all fantastic cricketers, but coming to the end of their sort of careers in first team cricket. So when I took over from Neil, we had a plan, really, and I'll always be grateful for the club for backing that plan, because a lot of clubs sort of want success straight away and probably go and chuck a bit of money at it to get it. Whereas we decided to go a slightly different way and invest in guys like Lewis Ellison, Dan Gibbs, and there was other youngsters at the time who didn't quite come through to the same level. But we just decided to back them and a couple of good senior players around them and sort of build up for 4 or 5 years. That was the plan. Now, that all sounds great on there when you speak about it, but doing it was pretty hard work, to be honest, and we had some rough times. We nearly got relegated in 2015. But, yeah, it all sort of came together in 2016 somehow. So, yeah, it's been quite a journey, to be honest. Yeah.
So, essentially, what we're saying there, Dan, I totally put words in your mouth, owes all of his success basically in his tenure down to you and your prior planning. Is that basically what we're saying?
I wouldn't say that. I think John's a completely different captain to me. Completely different. He's ruthless. He's completely decision based. He'll do whatever's right at that time. And I had that. I was like that too. But at the time, I always had to look at the bigger picture as well. So I always had to sort of give young guys a bit of exposure when maybe somebody else would have been a better option. But give them that exposure to sort of help the development. Whereas the team's at a stage now where it's just, you know, we've got 1 to 11 sort of covered, and John can pretty much pick and choose. I was just talking to Ash about bowling options. If a pitch suits a spinner on one day, I might have a bowl and Harry Bailey will have a bowl, but we might not bowl for 3 or 4 weeks if the pitch is green and the big lads are doing the job. So, yeah, John's done unbelievably. He's been captain for 4 years. This is his fourth year. He's won 3 Premier League titles and a Tullback Cup. So I don't think it's him with him, really, in terms of trophies. But, yeah, I can look back and be pretty proud of where we've ended up. Yeah, yeah.
I've got it down next on my list anyway, but you've mentioned just briefly there your staff's aspirations. Talk us through what you went through with staffs and what it was like really when, and I don't mean any disrespect by this, by saying when you were coming through and playing for staffs, like it's a ship that sailed completely, because the door is never shut. The door is never ever shut. We need to remember that. You never know. They might fit you in as one of those overage players. You never know.
No chance.
So what was your experience and coming through? Any regrets? Any highlights playing for staff?
It was a massive highlight playing for staff as a young player. That was my aim, really. It was the reason I left Whitmore to go to Little Stoke. And it was the reason I left Little Stoke to go to Port Hill to try and get on to getting the staff team. If I'm completely honest, I probably wasn't good enough at the time. I was batting number 4 or 5 in club cricket, which suited me because I was quite aggressive when I was younger. I'd try and go in and be positive when the ball was a little bit older. And I played for staffs for a season, batting number 3. And staffs used completely the balls to lead cricket. And the ball was swinging around corners, and I just kept getting out. And the level was a bit of an eye-opener, really, because I wasn't really somebody that practiced really. I wasn't really technically focused. I didn't do lots of sort of drills to fine-tune the technique. It was more sort of mentally based on the game. But going up that level, Metcalfe wasn't good enough to bat number three at that level. So that's a slight regret. And the team at the time was just on a slight down, sort of decline. People like Craig Barker, Dave Edwards, Paul Goodwin, although Paul carried on. That team was probably coming to an end. So the young lads, there's people like me, James Dawson, Aaron Jevons, Tim coming into the team then, Paul Byrne. It felt like quite a bit of pressure on us at that time. Now, this is about 10, 11 years ago, so I'm completely wrong in my memory, but it did feel at the time I was under quite a bit of pressure as a young lad to bat number three. I felt like I had to come in and hit hundreds, which I just felt was really at that time. But, at the time we were told it was a bit of a process. It was a bit of a mess. It didn't quite work out like sort of. I played five or six games and didn't do enough. I wasn't good enough at the time and never really featured again, which was a disappointment because I thought that learning that I'd done could have been a difference for the next season. But there's always good players ready to take your place in this county. So ultimately, I think if you look back a main period of time, there's been better players than me. And ultimately, they've played longer for staff, so no real feeling at all there.
And what about from someone who's worn the cap then and looking at the side now? We've obviously got lads in your team, lads in the league, lads that you come across playing staffs now. What do you think of the change of format? I know it's something we've discussed on here before, Turner, and we weren't the biggest of fans initially, were we?
Not originally.
What do you think of the change of formats?
In our league?
Yeah, cricket. Let's start there with the age limits.
In staffs cricket?
And the age cap.
I get the reasoning behind it. It makes sense for the ECB to promote young players who have got a potential to play first-class cricket, because ultimately that's what minor counties cricket should be about, I think. But I think if you look around some of the counties this year, it's probably just devalued it slightly. Because, like talking through Club Vita, I get to talk to quite a lot of people around the country, and I've heard that some counties are picking their eight best players regardless of age or whatever, and then they're just finding lads who, fit the age group and chuck them in type thing. I don't know how true that is. That's just what I've been told. You look at the staff team, the staffs have got a quality team, haven't they? I don't think you can put too many players in there you can look at and say shouldn't be in there. I think it's a strange one because the age thing does sort of create a complication that you're not putting your best in my opinion. But, is that the right thing moving forward to progress cricketers into first-class cricket? I don't know.
It's something we discussed previously, isn't it, Turner? And, our argument was, surely in minor counties cricket, you want to, if I was in charge of minor counties cricket, I want the best players playing at all times.
Yeah, I agree. I also think if at 22 or 23, you're not already involved with the county, the chances of you making it through the minor counties route are pretty slim, unless you go and bang the door down and get 100 every innings you're playing. I don't necessarily look at, minor counties cricket too much and say, oh, such and such is 24, he's getting a lot of runs. I think if you're sort of 22, 23, you're not already involved in the county, your chances to make it anyway. So probably backs up your argument, Jono, that should you just go and pick your best team anyway and not worry about, getting people in.
So you've... Borders on to our next point already, really. You've just mentioned it there. So your more recent venture is looking after Club Vitae Sports. Tell us a little bit about that. Tell us how you got into it and tell us what your day-to-day is looking after that.
Yeah, bit of a strange one, really, because I was helping people out informally around 3 or 4 years ago. Just obviously in club cricket, you get to know people, you meet through overseas players coming over, and obviously in North staffs, everybody knows each other, so I'm quite close to a lot of people at clubs. And people just started asking for help, do I know anybody, blah, blah, blah. And obviously at Port Hill, I was dealing with the pro every year. And after, you know, not bad experiences, but after some mixed experiences with some agents, I thought to myself, I could probably do this myself. I've got enough contacts now. And so I was doing it informally for a bit, and then just a chance, sort of conversation really with Longie, Darren Longie, who is the owner of Vitae Sports, who we're partnered with. We got a sub pro through him. We got Joe Leach to play for Port Hill in 2017. We just got talking, and Longie was sort of saying, I'm getting so many requests for cricket, I'm just too busy. I'm just too busy to deal with it. And that was just the time I was thinking about getting involved. So it was almost like a perfect storm. Longie sort of contacts in the first class world and, well, everywhere in the world. And sort of my drive and knowledge of club cricket, it just seemed to fit pretty well. So we decided, and probably couldn't have picked a worse time to do it. Bunch of people to come join us. But yeah, we're doing all right. We're making some good connections, getting some good players over. So yeah, it's all going pretty well.
So your clients then in our league, if we have a focus on North Staffs initially, and it kind of ties into kind of where I want to go with this kind of conversation. Obviously, for those listeners outside the area, the North Staffs to South Cheshire League is an open league, so clubs are free to pay how much and whoever they want. So let's start there, Dan. Good for our league or bad for our league, open or closed?
I don't think it's good or bad. I can see why it's happened, because people were getting paid regardless. And to make it open, almost sort of, there's a bit of sort of visibility there that everybody knows sort of who's getting paid and who isn't. But my problem with it is potentially it might have just diluted the quality a little bit. In the Premier League, I've noticed over the last few years, not so much the bowling. The bowling's always been quality, but I think the batting has started just to wane a bit. So when I first started playing Premier cricket, it was, you know, you were still, if number 7, 8, 9 were batting, you were still, there were still quality players, and we were still trying to think, you know, how to get these out. Whereas sort of get to 8, 9, 10 now, and it, without being disrespectful to anybody, it's just because those players are now getting paid a little bit of money to go and play in Div 2, Div 3, which is absolutely fine. That's their right. But I think it has just diluted the quality of the Premier League just slightly, I'd say.
Do you think that overall has a benefit to the league then? Some of the talent being diluted down? Divisions 1, 2, 3 strengthened slightly. Premier Division less so. Is the legs in that?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say the standard's been diluted massively. And there's still some absolutely quality teams, and I don't think the standard is much different to when I first started. But, you know, my aim as a 17-year-old was to play for Staffordshire. It was to play at the top of the Premier League. That was my aim. I'm not entirely 17, 18-year-old now. Think that way, I think. And I noticed this my last year as a captain. It was one of the reasons I sort of started to think I probably am at it. You speak to anyone, it's half decent, and not the first question they ask, but you'll explain pleasantries and talk about where you see them fitting in and stuff, and there's almost like an elephant in the room to say, well, how much are you going to pay me? And for me, players should be doing a little bit more to earn the right to be paid. But I think some guys get paid now, you know, get 150, 200 runs a year and you're getting paid, which that's the club's prerogative, no problem at all. But for me, that isn't what club cricket should be about. It should be about trying to drive as high as you can, trying to play as high as they can. So yeah, I'm a bit on the fence with it because I can see why it is in there, but I'm also a little bit sort of, for me, you should pay the top end, the top bracket, whether it's a pro or the best amateurs. I'm not entirely sure you should be paying players just to fill a feeding, which happens.
I'm going to come from a slightly different tack then, Dan. And obviously, as someone now who works as an agent who has clients with as clubs and professional cricketers as well, what do you think in terms of the structure that we hold in North Staffs now in terms of the longevity of some clubs? And what I mean by that, and this is not directed at anyone in particular, but do you, as someone now who is involved in this as a professional, dealing with this professionally, do you worry for some people economically, especially coming through COVID and what we go through next post-COVID?
Yeah, yeah. I can see why you asked that question. For me, coming from a slightly different angle, I think it's club's responsibility to look after themselves and finance themselves in a way that, you know, say this year, quite a lot of teams have gone without a pro. Try and save some money. That's fine. That is what you need to do to survive, or you cut costs, no problem. Some of the clubs are chucking quite a lot of money around without a massive structure beneath that. So junior cricket, second team, third team, you know, stuff like that. I think that's my worry, that teams I worry might not be here in 4 or 5 years, because once that payment goes, where does that club go then? You know, your juniors are struggling. For me, you should start with the juniors, then go to the thirds, then go to the second, and then if you can make your first bit, but make sure your club's sustainable before you do that. That's just my opinion. I know clubs do it differently. And who am I to tell other clubs what to do? That's not what I'm saying at all. I just think, in my opinion, you have to get the base right first and then go from there.
Absolutely right. Dan, that's awesome. Anyone who can or wants to, from your local cricket clubs who don't know what you do, feel free to send us a message online, send us a message on Twitter. If you're interested in getting in touch with Dan, I can highly recommend his service and his time and his manner. And he's always more than willing to listen to any specifics or any kind of details that you want ironing out. And that's coming from someone who has always spoken to Dan since I took up my role at my club, but also actually, and I've got no issue saying that, I'm sure Dan won't, but actually choosing not to go with Dan every year, and I mean that in the nicest way possible, that I'm still willing to pay him a compliment, even though that we've chosen not to go that direction.
He's after a discount for next year, Dan. So you're not making that stuff.
It's tough times, mate. You've got to do whatever you can, haven't you? But no, in all seriousness, Dan, we really appreciate that. And anyone who wants to get in touch, Club Retire all over Twitter, obviously Retire Sports as well. So just get in touch with Dan and anyone who wants to get in touch with us. So Dan, if it's all right with you, we're going to have a chat about the first England test, and if you want to hang around, and then we'll finish off with a bit about the Nathan Butler day towards the end. Is that all right with you?
Yeah, that's fine. No problem.
Oh, dare I ask, Turner, come off your long run. I'll pose you one question. England, saved by the rain, or do India need to thank the weather gods?
We were saved, weren't we? Let's be fair. I mean, don't get me wrong, I think we were still in the game, but I would put it, say, 20-80 in the favour of India. Maybe it's pushed 25-75% chance. I guess there was a small chance of a draw also, but depending on how much rain we'd have got. But yeah, if it was a full day's cricket, I was backing India a lot more than England. Mainly because I think of that last hour before, I think it's fair to say before the end of day four, I thought if we'd got maybe, say, they finished day, say, 30 for one, or they finished today 50 for two or three, you put England on level terms, but 50 for one without the ball swinging basically at all, I'd be very worried, I'll be honest.
Where's your biggest concern, Turner? Top three, aging bowling attack, middle order, where's the biggest worry?
I think it's got to be the top three, on the basis that we seem to have tried everyone, and we're now going back to trying other people again, or just trying to hold on to people and saying, well, he's quite young, we'll give him a go, but he's still averaging less. People are still averaging 30 or less than 30 after 20 tests, and I think it's that's the worry. I think aging bowling is a worry, as we've seen with the injuries that have come out today, but we've got youngsters who you would back to replace them. I think middle order, you're always going to have Stokes and Root that are going to get you out of the shit. And probably players like Butler and Pope are always going to have the odd good innings and do enough to warrant a place and to drag you out of the shit maybe when Root and Stokes don't. But that top order was, I mean, we either seem to be very, very bad and we end up 20 for 3. Or we do what we consider as quite good, but after 50 overs, we're 70 for 3. And is that really good enough when you've took more than half a day's play? You're still two or three down, and you still haven't got near to the 100 mark, really. I think that's my biggest worry. But the issue is I don't think it's a quick fix by any stretch of the imagination.
The international cricket version of seeing the opening bowlers off because they've run out of overs, except the incomers, they can actually come back on a bit later on in the day.
and they get another new ball, so it just doesn't work like that.
it'd be proper effective club cricket, that would, wouldn't it? Well done, lads, you've done a great job. Old boy up the top's got 10 off 95, but he's done us a great service today.
Yeah.
Let's spin it round into a... I'll mention one name to you, Robinson. The real deal or not?
I'm going to let Dan go first on Ollie Robinson.
Ollie Robinson, I think in England, he'll be as good as anybody. Interesting to see how he goes overseas. But he's probably one of those options we've got at the moment. He seems to stand the seam up, hit the seam, which ideal in England. He's got a bit about him as well, which I quite like. He gives the odd send-off and people, which is quite nice to see. So I think he looks a good bowler,
Balls it full turner, don't he?
I think everything about him says he'll always be good in England. I'm interested to see if, even though he lacks maybe that extra 3 or 4 mile an hour, will he is high to the fact that he releases it as high as his Holder and Jameson. Will that be enough abroad and in other places to make him good enough to really challenge sort of the best players? Could he go to Australia, even though he only sort of bowls mid-80s? Will that height advantage be enough to sort of... He's not going to replace Archer, is he, by any stretch of the imagination, but do a good enough job that he doesn't look out of place and we aren't doing the classic England thing of we get to the fifth test, we're 4-0 down, let's just pick 3-4 random kids and stick them in there and say, go on, you can't do any worse sort of thing. Like, is he going to sort of stand up to that test of time? And I hope he will, and I think he probably will, to be fair to you. Mate, as much because he has got that bit of a nasty side, that bit of a shit outside. I mean, I'd love to see him and Ramin Siraj locked in a room together. Yeah, to feel like they just tear each other to pieces.
Just get a disclaimer out there. That's not just because he's got a history of racism. That's just because he has just got a bit of naughtiness about him as well. Right then. So on that note, let's go for some ratings. So Dan, this is traditional whenever England play. We get a set of ratings out after each test match. So tin hats on. Let's start at the top.
I'm trying Rory to remember Burns, the game now.
Rory Burns, Tierney.
Going to go for a middling 5.
Generous, I think.
Well, I'm trying to let him off for the duck in the fact that it was a good ball, even though I thought it was a shit shot.
Oh, that's okay. Dan?
I'll go 5 because I can't remember how many runs he got.
Not many.
Not many. He did slightly marginally better second innings, didn't he?
I'm going to get the scorecard up now to jog in memory.
Right. Sibbers.
Sibbers.
He can't get less than a 5. You've set your stall.
No,
right
I
now.
Know. Which is why I think I'd give Sibbers probably a 6.
Okay.
I mean, don't get me wrong, he bats long. And when he bats with Root, that's great because Root goes at a tempo and Root looks really good when he bats with him. But when he's batting next to Burns or Crawley or anyone else, it just feels like, yes, we're not getting out, but also not getting anywhere. And I hate that because I really like his temperament and his his mental strength to keep going, but I just think maybe it is a bit above his level.
Any advances on a six, Dan?
No, I'll go 6-2, but I have got a bit of sympathy for Burns and Sibley, especially over all the batters at the moment, because they are Red Bull players, aren't they, really? And their preparation going into a test match against probably the best team they're going to play was non-existent. And I know that's an excuse, and I know everybody's in the same boat, but I just felt a little bit sorry for them. That their techniques also are quite unique. So I think they need time to groove those techniques and practices and games, and they just haven't had that time to do it. So I did feel like they were both trying to find a bit of form at the highest level, and I don't think that's ideal at all.
I'll add another one into the mix that came out from CricViz in the week. Opening partnerships in England or opening batsmen in England average the lowest of any test playing nation since 2010 by the greatest margin of any other country between two. So essentially what we're saying there is not only is it the hardest place to open the batting, but it's harder by the greatest amount from any other country. And that's England since 2010. Alistair Coote was on Test Match Special on Wednesday last week, said his last 18 months of his career in England were the hardest 18 months of his life, even though that's the best form that he felt in his entire illustrious career. So, against a good attack, as you say, Dan, a five and a six. I think you pair have done them a right service there. Scrape 11 together between them.
I've listened to you two before. I'm not as harsh as you two.
Yeah, well... You're currently hurting yourself sitting on that fence, I think. You described your brother as a bit more ruthless earlier. That would have got a score of five. Put it that way. Right, Crawley.
I feel like I can't rate him any lower than Burns, but I just don't think he's ready to be a test match cricketer. Five, I'm going to say, which is probably quite harsh, but I just don't see it with him. I really do not see.
I can't believe you consider less than 20 runs in a test match batting at three is harsh.
I thought he got more than that, did he not? I thought he got about 40, 30 odd, fair enough. In my head, his first innings was a bit better than 27.
Yeah.
Dan Crawley.
I'm going to be ruthless. He's a 4.5 for me.
Yeah, I like that. Now we're getting more onto my wavelength.
For me, batting number three in England, he plays with his hands too much, I think. I think he's got to tighten up a lot. But if you look at his stats, he averages 30, I think, in first-class cricket, and he's averaging 28 in test cricket, so he's probably performing.
As you'd expect.
Yeah.
And that's with a 260-odd not out, or was he out? Yeah. I can't even remember, in there, thrown in for the mix. Funny you say that, actually, because a lot of the Sky pundits, I listened to the Sky cricket podcast this week, David Lloyd, nice to say, Michael Atherton, all said, yeah, he's an opening batsman. I thought, that's interesting for a lad who's throwing his hands outside off stump like he is.
If they see him as an investment and they're doing it, they see him sort of like a Triscothic type who wasn't overly smashing it in county cricket, but he did well. I'm fine with that, but they've either got to stick with him or give him a rest, I think. I think he's mentally a bit fatigued, isn't he, at the moment.
There we go on to Captain Courageous then. Joe Root, all scores allowed here.
I'm going to go 9. It would have, and if it was a purely on batting, I would dare say I'd probably go 9.5, maybe even a 10, because I don't think I've seen him look that good in a long, long time. But some of the reviews were fucking dreadful. So just for that, he loses a point.
Okay, I like that. Dan?
I'll give him a 10.
Ooh.
He's quality, isn't he? He's unbelievable.
Looked like he was playing on a different pitch to everyone else.
Yeah.
I think he described it in his post-match interview. I've got it written down here as the best I've ever felt, which 106, considering he got about 500 runs in three games in the winter to come in and get 106 or 104, whatever it was, on a green seam at Trent Bridge. Fair dues.
Yeah.
Who did we have coming in at 5? Young
JB. John. Young Blue eyes himself.
Interesting selection.
Interesting. I don't think failed, but also, I don't know, I felt like it summed up Johnny Bairstow. He got to basically 30 each innings, and then in the first innings got caught LBW from, which was reasonably poor. And then second innings decided he was going to slam it down deep square leg's throat, even though that had clearly been the plan for quite a few balls, and he still decided to do it. And I was just like, why? Why? There was clearly, if he kept his brain, I reckon there was at least a 60-70 out there for him, and that puts England massively in the driving seat and probably favourites going into the last innings, but he just blew it there. So probably go 7.
It says everything I need to know about the England batting lineup here, that a 30 in each innings.
Well, I know.
A 7 out of 10.
I'm basing it on India being shit with a bat too, so I'm assuming it must have been hard to bat. But
just remember, mate, right, when you were on FIFA or you're on Football Manager, you start at like 5-6. So yeah, 7, true. You've contributed. You've had a good game if you've had a 7. So I'm a bit.
He's the second best batsman, mate. So that makes him, I guess you've got to class him as slightly positive.
That's slightly. A worry. Dan, young Johnny Bairstow.
I'll give him a 6, but I do think he's been badly mismanaged in Test cricket by England. Like, he's got the potential to be one of our best players, and he's been moved up and down the order. He's been given the gloves, taking the gloves off him.
So you know what's happening tomorrow, don't you, Dan? He's batting three.
He's batting three, I know. And then he was told to focus on white ball, so he's done that, and he's playing shots which in Test cricket, in white ball cricket, are acceptable because there's gaps and no catches and stuff. But yeah, I feel a bit sorry for him. I think he's been messed about a bit, but played a couple of bad shots, didn't he, I think, in that game.
Another young man here, I actually think, has been harshly done to in the press the last week or so. Dan Lawrence, yeah. Turner.
I like Dan Lawrence. He's still the worst batsman I've ever seen for the first 20 balls, but after that, he's one of the best batsmen. I feel sorry for him because actually you look at his stats compared to the rest and he's probably the second best batsman that England have had this year, and yet he seemed to be the easiest one for everyone in the media to drop. So let's drop him and bring Pope in, even though Pope's stats have been worse, which to me is just peculiar. I understand Pope maybe looks nicer or looks more aesthetically traditional, but I don't think Pope's any better than Lawrence. In fact,
coming off back of an 81 not out as well, as someone said that he was struggling for form. 81 not out in his last run out in a test match.
Yeah, utterly bizarre. I mean, first inning strangles one down leg for a duck. Second inning looked okay and then got out in the 20s. Probably can only really give him a 5. But I would not be dropping Lawrence tomorrow, even though I know full well England will. I'd have probably given him another game.
Go with that, Dan.
Yeah, I'd echo exactly what Ash has said, to be honest. I think if Lawrence is coming into a team with Trott, Bell, Strauss, Peterson, he can slot in and build his career, can't he? But because he's in a team that's underperforming, I think the expectancy of him is to come in and score on straight away, which doesn't happen, does it, at that level? So, yeah, again, I think a bit harsh, is it? I didn't know he was getting left out, but he's getting left out pretty harsh.
Highest first-class batting average other than Joe Root in that team. So, can't exactly say that he's not dominated counter cricket to an extent. I'm going to come on to the man who I thought looked the most ring-rusty of all of us, Josh Butler, Turner.
I love Butler, but I'll be honest, I'd say he was the one who looked the worst with a bat. That first innings was the most painful 18 balls I think I've watched. It just didn't look like he knew where to be. And to be fair, I thought he looked poor in the 100, which is a shame because obviously you're expecting him to be the big name and be probably the main man. I feel sorry for him because he's obviously not had the practice he wanted or needed. And I think he seems to be someone that really, really needs that practice. He looked much better last year in test matches when we had bubbles and he had to practice Red Bull cricket for a good while. Whereas others might come in and be able to just do it without any prep. I think he needs it. So I'm going to be harsh and probably give him a 4, but in reality, I just can't get over them 18 balls, Jono. That was the worst 18 balls I've seen in a long, long time. He didn't move his feet for all 18 balls, which was impressive.
It was the most, I think it was the most I've ever seen an international cricketer could have been dismissed in a period of time, because it quite literally was a spell of about 3 overs. But I thought to myself, he's going to get out here every ball. And then he did. He didn't disappoint. Dan, yeah, any advantage on a 4?
That first innings reminded me of when Azarola used to bowl at number 10 and 11 in our league. It was miss, miss, miss. But yeah, I mean, there's no doubt his quality is, but he didn't have a great game, did he? And I think Ash is right. He needs time in the crease. And again, unfortunately, Test match cricket just isn't getting that time to give the lads preparation. So can't score him much higher than a 5 for this game, I'd say. I can't really remember him making many mistakes with the gloves, but needs to score runs, doesn't he?
The fourth seamer, Turner, Sam Curran.
If we're going on batting, probably a 6 or 7. But I was quite impressed by him. He did his job as he needed to. Bowling, I mean, was pretty much non-existent, I think it's fair to say. Hey, probably give him, I'd just give him a middling 6, because he basically played as sort of the all-rounder and did a decent job in one. Was just very quiet in the other. So I think I'll just give him, I'll be kindish and give him just a middling 6 for that.
Dan?
Yeah, 6.5, I'll go 7. I think if he doesn't take the new ball, bowling is nowhere near as effective. I think his skill is with the new ball where he swings it and get people out still with an older ball, but he doesn't seem that effective, does he? And at the pace he bowls at that level, players can sort of, if it's not swinging, players can play him pretty comfortably. But he's another one I think we should stick with, because if Wokes isn't playing, he's perfect at number 8, isn't he? So again, further down the line, I think we should stick with him, but not a great game with the ball for him. So yeah, 6, 6.5, something like that.
The main man from the first innings then, Ollie Robinson, we've mentioned him already. Turner?
8, I'll give him. I was very, very impressed by his bowling. Good fifer, deserved fifer. Nice that Broad caught it as well after he shelled that one against New Zealand for his fifer. And yeah, I was very impressed with him. Batting was shaky in that first innings, but obviously he's not really in there to bat. I know we keep saying he can bat, but he showed a bit more in the second innings, I guess. And yeah, just bowling was very, very good.
People keep telling me Jofra Archer can bat as well, mate. But
in the IPL, mate, he can. There's just nothing else.
I'm yet to see any evidence.
Well, you ain't going to see him bat for another 6 months.
Dan,
Ollie
Robinson,
months,
I think he's been harsh there with an 8.
Yeah, I'd go 9 for Robinson.
Hmm.
Fair batting lineup to get a 5 for against, isn't it?
Yeah, and a deserved one at that.
Yeah.
On to the old two old stages then. Start with Stuart Broad, Turner.
Broad's an odd one, because I think he had spells where he bowled very, very well, and then he had other spells where he was pretty redundant, didn't really do much, didn't really threaten. I mean, what did he pick up? Was it just a single wicket? I'd probably give him 6. I think he was just very, wasn't quite the Broad I think we all hope, sort of expect these days, but I also think, again, he's someone who hasn't really bowled that much. And I think both him and Anderson probably as much to do with sort of the stage of the career they're at, probably need a couple of spells before they come into a test match. Yeah. And I think that sort of showed with both of them that their spells were better as it went on. And I particularly enjoyed head-banded Broad coming back in the second innings and dangerous.
Any advance on that, Dan?
No, I'd go with that. To be honest, I didn't see much on bowl. Just looking at his figures now, did all right, then he didn't go for many runs. But
I think that's about a summary, to be honest with you, mate. Not easily forgettable.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll go with that. Give him a 6 then.
That's about it. And then if there are any other answers other than a 10 for providing me the greatest 5-minute theatre I'll probably have in this cricketing summer, all other answers unaccepted. Turner, Jimmy Anderson.
I would give Jimmy probably an 8. Probably, yeah. to be fair, his first spell worried me, but after that, superb as always. And as you say, sort of that sort of 5-10 minute spell, I mean, obviously he made everyone's day when he got Virat the fraud out for a goal, and that amused everyone. And yeah, just typical Anderson, wasn't it, really. Once he got that first spell out of the way and got himself going, he just looked as good as ever, to be fair to him.
Dan?
Yeah, I'm going to give him a 9. I think he's unbelievable. How old is he now? 38?
38.
39 this summer, isn't he?
Unbelievable. Yeah, I'm 35. And if I bowl one or two overs on a Saturday, I literally can't get out of bed. He's opening the bowling for England and getting Virat Kohli out first ball. It's unbelievable. So, yeah, give him a 9. Because that first ball to Kohli, that's what it's all about.
That was cricket. Just good cricket.
Yeah.
Mm. I think you two have been incredibly kind on the old scores there. So let's quickly catch up before we move on to talking about some fundraisers and a very, very, very brief North Staff roundup before we go anywhere. So for Dan, who says he hasn't heard it, so rumours of a leaked team. Moeen Ali comes back into the squad and is playing. Young Johnny Bairstow, rumoured to be batting at 3. There are also rumours potentially of as many of at least Lawrence Crawley and even maybe Sibley being out. Moeen Ali to come back in, Hameed to come back in. Who else is coming back in? I have no idea. Then we've got the additional news that's come out today. So Broad was initially injured going for a scan. Broad's now out of the test match, and then Broad is out of the series. So no more Stuart Broad for the rest of the test summer. So we wish him well getting ready for the Ashes. So you'd have initially thought Mark Wood, presumably, to come in.
Would think so, wouldn't you?
And then we've got perhaps the more worrying news that Jimmy Anderson's picked up a quad injury and is going to have a late fitness test tomorrow morning. And this could, if I'm corrected, could be corrected, will be the first home test match since 2007 that's not featured either one of Jimmy Anderson or Stuart Broad.
And I believe, I'm sure since 2008, there's only been two games, one at home and one away, where they both haven't played, or something daft like that.
Yeah,
crazy.
That would be right. Not bad for 14-year run.
Not really.
So, a couple of bits to pick up on there. Dan's mentioned the word mishandling. So I'd like to add Moeen Ali into that mix, Dan, in terms of mishandling.
I was just about to say exactly the same. I love Moeen Ali. Unbelievable cricketer. One of the most talented we've got, I think. And again, I think he's just been a little bit mishandled. But I think he made a choice, did he not, not to play at some point last year? Am I right in saying that?
Yeah.
So he's got to take a bit of responsibility himself. But was that for mental health reasons? Or was that... I can't remember.
I think it was a lack of bubble, and he just had a newborn auntie, so
yeah, so that's fair.
He goes
enough
to go home before his time, auntie, I think.
Yeah. So I suppose it's not all mishandling, but you've got somebody who can take 5 minutes. For me, you've got to look after him. You've got to find a way of making him feel part of the team. Not as many cricketers do that. So for me, yeah, I'm surprised to see that, but I do like him.
What's Moeen Ali's role then, Turner, coming back into this side? Is he there to shore up the middle order, having been playing in, well, headlining the 100, really? Mm-hmm. Or is he coming back in to provide a bit of balance with us not having, like, what we call it, an out-and-out all-rounder in Ben Stokes? Or are they playing him above Don Bess, who's been released from the squad altogether? Shows how much they think of him after, an inconsistent winter. And perhaps more worryingly, in ahead of Jack Leach.
I think it strikes to me that they don't really think they need a spinner, but they're worried they might do, so they've picked him because really what they want is a batsman, and he's probably the closest thing they can get to a batsman who bowls spin without it just being Joe Root bowling all afternoon. It's a difficult one because I don't think Lords is particularly a spinner's paradise by any stretch, really, so I just find it a bit of an odd one. If you're going to pick a spinner, I would assume you'd go out and want to pick a proper, well, not a proper spinner, but sort of an out-and-out spinner. So they must just be picking him for me as a batsman to bat seven. And I don't know whether it's a bit of the, well, it's against India factor, and he seems to do well against India, or what, really. He does average good. He does average in the high 30s at number seven in test matches. So if we feel that we need seven batsmen, then I can't disagree with it based on those stats, but he just hasn't played Red Bull cricket. And yeah, I just find it all a bit peculiar. Both Moeen and Bairstow, I really like. And I think if they'd been managed correctly, would have been the best of the best test players we got. Probably up there with Root and Stokes, but instead, we mishandled them because we wanted to win the World Cup, which is fair enough. But I think it's then led to them missing out, and I now feel like it's unfair then I keep bringing them back in just for random test matches to try and fill a void because we fucked them about. But I find it a difficult one with them because they're clearly good players, and we're obviously struggling for good players. But I'm just not sure. I don't think it sends out the right message to someone like Leach, who keeps on giving up all his time to sit in bubbles, to not get a game, even though he's done nothing wrong. And probably, I think it's fair to say, he's the best spinner in English spinner. So it's just bizarre. And you say Dom Best. I mean, I wouldn't have picked Dom Best for the series anyway, to be fair. I'd probably given someone else like Parkinson and go as the backup spinner. But how must he feel after being pissed about in India, and now he sat in a bubble for a week to run drinks and then get replaced by Moeen Ali to do the role that he was apparently in the squad for? Just, it all seems a bit weird to me.
Dan, I'm going to go to a, I know we like a football as well, I'm going to go to a footballing term here that I listened to in the past week. Do you think the likes of Johnny Bairstow and Moeen Ali lack value because they almost lack a job or a position in the England team? Moeen Ali's bowling average is well in excess of 30, so he's never quite cracked it as a frontline spinner. Johnny Bairstow initially came in the middle order, struggled, came back, had a bit of success, then struggled, then back to the middle order, then he's kept. Did he suffer from not having a role or a job?
Yeah, I think so. I think if Bairstow wasn't a keeper when he first came into the team, I think he'd have had a better test match career. I think the fact they saw him as it was him or Butler at the time, you go back a few years, cost him a little bit, I think, because I think he's a proper top order batter, or he was, you know, at the time he was being talked about. And Ali, yeah, I think Ali's, he's brilliant away from home, isn't he? I think he gives the ball a good rip and he bats well, but you probably wouldn't bank on him to be a regular top six batter. But you look at our spinners at the moment, is anybody, I take your point about Jack Leach, but are they really banging the door down, the other spinners, to say, pick me just as a spinner? Like, Parkinson's got a lot of potential, Bessie's been in and out, Leach is always around the squad, but they just don't seem to fancy him for some reason, do they, when push comes to shove? So for me, I'd probably look at what's behind Moeen Ali and suggest that's maybe picked, rather than his performance is warranting it currently. But I don't know. Yeah, I think you're probably right. It's like the old Phil Neville, isn't it, in football? He can play four or five positions, so he's always just fills in where there's a gap.
Absolutely. And just to finish on the, I say the preview for the second test, but this is more maybe about looking forward. Obviously, Dan, you got your contact in and around the English cricket scene, international cricket scene. Speak to people. Any names that we need to look out for on the horizon, do you think?
James Bracey. Look out for him.
Yes, James. Friend of the pod.
Friend of the pod, one of our first guests.
Beat our sports client. He's, for me, he was a bit harshly treated in the media after the first game he played. Strange circumstances to make your test debut. But I reckon Bracey could. He's got a good technique. I reckon he's got as good a chance of any of the top order batters at the moment, especially with how they're underperforming. I'm just trying to think off the top of my head now.
I'll throw a name out that I heard on the Sky Sports podcast, and I feel really guilty because I have literally called him rubbish on this podcast before, and that's based off one staff's performance. That's Rob Yates from Warwickshire. Yeah. I watched him back for staffs once at Nipers League. I called him rubbish on the pod, and now basically he's been talked about as a potential England candidate. So shows what I know.
Yeah. Clark at Notts, I reckon, is one to look out for as well. He's a serious player, isn't he?
Joe Clark?
Yeah.
I don't know how he goes in Red Bull, but he looks like he's got a decent technique.
He's a very good player, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Just controversial, isn't he?
Yeah.
We don't do controversial anymore.
Alex Hale School of Christian behaviour.
Right
then. Actually, lads, we'll start wrapping things up now. And normally at this point in time, Dan, we'd have a conversation about North Staffordshire cricket, and normally I'd talk about it, but I suppose I'd best pass it over to Ash because it'll take all of 2 seconds because...
Nothing happened, did it?
Four positive results, Turner. Four positive results in the top four leagues this weekend.
I'm surprised there was that many, mate, to be totally honest with you. To be fair, I think it's fair to say the biggest news was Ricky Vessels turning up for Longton and smashing 126 off 59 balls.
That was a good one. You haven't sorted that one, Dan, have you?
I haven't, no. The lads were asking me about that because they're saying, you haven't helped Longton, have you? I said no. But, they've made quite a statement there, haven't they? I think put them down as favourites now they've signed in, definitely.
He's been completely released from his deal with Worcestershire, so it wouldn't surprise me if we don't see him. If not for a few more weeks, maybe until all the way till the end of the season. I wouldn't be surprised if we're seeing
I think he's in for the rest of the season, I think. I was saying to Ash just before we came on, I was trying to get a bit of info out of Ed Jones, but he was big coy, so we'll see.
Yeah. He might have hit 126 though, but he still didn't win our star of the weekend. Which we'll get on to, which was laughable.
What have you got to do to win the star of the week?
I don't know.
Just on Vessels, we're playing a 2020 against Longton on Friday. So,
I bet you're thrilled.
Can't wait. I don't think there'll be a cuter bowl, put it that way.
I'll just throw it out there as well, mate, that Bingle End are in the 2020 plate final. So if we win that, we play the winners of the 2020 cup final. And it is at Bingle End. So if you want to have terrible memories and have kittens about... past performances, which your brother was very, very stoic about. I must admit, then do your best Friday, have a bowl at our Ricky, and we'll see what we can sort out. Mate, got to get past Sandbach, obviously.
The bollocking we got after that game against you boys was like nothing I've ever known.
Right, I know. Auntie Jean, for anyone who's ever been to Bingle End, Auntie Jean, God rest her soul, was knocking on the Port Hill Park dressing room for all the 45 minutes to try and get the tea money so she could go in.
I can remember that, yeah. The door kept getting shut, didn't it? I can remember that.
Or she just kept getting it. Mohammed Azharullah just going, 2 minutes, mate.
Yeah,
2 minutes.
That's right. Yeah.
Division 1 was actually on Sunday in a rearranged game between Blyth and Endon coming out on top. Norton Ailes came out on top in a rain-affected game at Oakmore in Division 2. And then there was two results, one for Mickens and... one win for Stone Seconds in Division 4. They were the only results in the top four leagues this weekend. There was a couple of others in the lower leagues. No real movement other than it all got a little bit tight. Dan, we've been saying it's lining up for a decent end. It's all looking a bit tight in all four of the top divisions. You just said Longton favourites.
I'd say so.
Are you playing that coy for Port Hills and Mickens chances, or is that really what you believe?
Yeah, well, you sign Ricky Vessels and put him in on top of the team they've already got. It takes some stopping, aren't they? Play well, but I don't know. I think where we're sitting, I quite like us just being behind the front two. We've still got points to go on from the Cheadle game as well, which got cancelled because of COVID. So I think I'm right in saying we get average points from the second half of our season to go on to that. So that rain affected game Saturday kills us a little bit, brings our average points down, but it's going to be close. We've still got to play Longton, and I'm pretty sure Longton have still got to play Mickens. So there's still going to be plenty of ups and downs, I imagine.
I imagine so. I mean, we mentioned it last week, how tight it is that Whitmore, before the weekend, had won as many games as you. Obviously, they had their little points deduction for whatever that points deduction was for. And there was, I think before Saturday, was 8 places between you and them, even though you'd won the same amount of games. And that's how tight it was, especially in the top division.
Yeah.
So it's all coming very, very close. Right then. So that's the North Stash roundup done. Just one more thing in the world of world cricket. Chris Cairns, former New Zealand international cricketer, was taken ill this week. So I'm sure the world of cricket joins in wishing him best wishes in hospital currently in New Zealand. Bit of a shock to everyone. Obviously, that's one of the names of New Zealand cricket when I was growing up. So a bit of a weird one there. So wish him all the best. And that kind of brings us on to some fundraising efforts, Dan. So obviously, we are proud on the podcast to support cardiac risk in the younger selves. Obviously, we have a lot to do at Bignall End, and Turner's helped us a lot this year through the podcast to support the Danny Hughes Memorial Day. Everyone in local cricket will know that you play, and everyone at Port Hill plays a big hand in the Nathan Butler Memorial Day. So tell us a bit more about that. Tell us what's going on, and feel free to have as long as you possibly want to launch, make a plea to anyone and everything. Floor is yours.
No, I appreciate it. Yeah, Nathan's a really talented cricketer. Nathan Butler unfortunately died in 2006 of an undetected heart disease, which we've since learned that if you can pick that up and it can be detected, then you can potentially save people's lives. So in about 2013, maybe 2012, I just spoke to Nate's mum and dad and Josh Butler, who's one of my friends, who's his brother, and just about, you know, trying to raise some funds, cricket tournaments, which Nate, obviously, he liked to drink. He was only 16 at the time, to go out and stuff and enjoy parties. So let's bring it all together and do some fundraising. And we're still going now. So we use all the money raised to fund the screening days. So I think the age bracket is from 15 to 30. You might know better than me on that one, Jono. The money we raise goes to funding screening days, which can find defects in people, hopefully prevent him and his family else. And it's something at Port Hill we're extremely proud of. Nathan and his family, well, Nathan also his death, they're an inspiration to us all, and to have his memory going, really. So plenty going on for the kids, face painting, sweet stalls, lots of games going on around the ground, lots of beers, raffles, auctions. So if you're free on, actually, we've got it booked in for the 29th of August, which is a bank holiday, Sunday. But if we beat Longton on Friday, that's the T20 finals day, and it's also the thirds are in the Wild Blood Cup, is it? They're in the Wild Blood Cup final, so that's that day as well. So we've got a bit of jiggling around to do, but we're hopeful that we're going to host the day on that day. So yeah, anybody can give through auction prizes, raffle prizes, or attending on the day and buying a raffle ticket. Genuinely, that you raise will go to potentially saving someone's life. So yeah, that's pretty much it. But I genuinely thank you for letting me come on and talk about it, because it's something we're very, very passionate about, definitely.
No problem whatsoever, mate. And obviously, we know at Bignall End as well, and a lot of the local cricket community know, local football community know as well, the work that these families do. If you've never been to one of these screening days before, you're there for 5 or 10 minutes, you're very well looked after, and luckily for 99% of us, you go in, you have your stuff done, and then you walk back out the door with total peace of mind to prevent a horrific incident that people should never ever have to go through. And the work that these families do, and that everyone at Port Hill does, I know the Hughes family do through Bignall End and the local cricket clubs in the parish, absolutely unbelievable work. They've raised hundreds and hundreds of thousands of pounds to ensuring that people are safeguarded from stuff like that. So it is a real big inspiration. So we want to thank you for coming on, really, and want to thank everyone involved in the day. Turner and I have spoken. We've made an executive decision, Dan, with Moneybags Lalo being away. And we'd just like to extend that we're going to sort out a, through Woodstock, obviously they do some work through the pod, so we're going to sort out a gift voucher for you to use as a raffle prize or an auction prize.
Brilliant.
Use on the day. So we really appreciate your time, and hopefully we'll have some raffle tickets as well, because we know the lads from Portal have supported our cause.
Really appreciate that, lads. Yeah, brilliant. Thank you very much.
We'll make sure that's all sorted out, and we'll get the details over to you. So,
yeah, thank you.
We just want to finish then, Dan, if we would. I'm going to drop this one on you. Are you familiar with the TV programme Room 101?
Yes.
Okay, right. So we have our very own version of Cricketing Room 101.
Oh, bloody hell.
So I'm going to drop you in it now, and you, I'll just throw it out there that your brother had weeks to think about his and still couldn't make his mind up.
Okay.
Which is almost why I didn't want to tell you in advance, because I didn't want you thinking of anything and then just not going with it anyway. If I remember rightly, Turner, John actually, did he pick more than one? Because he couldn't decide what he wanted.
I think he picked a couple in the end, yeah.
So, very John, one thing that you want to chuck in the bin from cricket, it can be any form of cricket, it can be anything you want. Chuck it in the bin. You never have to worry about it again. What would it be?
That's a great question. Just deciding how to play it. First thing that came to my head, so I'll go with it. Egos in club cricket.
Ooh.
I don't get it. We're all club cricketers. We all work in the week. We all enjoy a game on a Saturday. I don't get why people have egos and. For me, egos in club cricket, get it in the bin.
Yeah, I mean, no one's naming names, Toby Dagg, but there's some
big shocking... big ego.
Well, just there, but there's some good egos. I've always found it a general trend, Dan, as well. The stranger the place you go to, the stranger the ego. I mean, I don't know whether that's a recurring theme across the divisions, but I'll let people allude to like their own.
Yeah, I've no problem with people backing themselves and stuff, but when you start looking as if you know you've played for England and you're turning out against Portal Park, you know, can't be doing that well, can you?
No, well, you say that, mate, but Wedgwood Cricket Club have actually got their own England international, isn't that right?
That's very true.
I once hit that England international in the head. I thought I'd killed him. I thought he died. I was as scared as I've ever been on the cricket pitch.
Mate, I want it to be mentioned, Keyman, I subbed him on the other Sunday at our club to come on as a bowler for me. He went for more runs off two balls than I did in two overs. I was absolutely fucking fuming at him. Made me look like a tactical idiot.
Well, it's... That was your first mistake.
Exactly.
Right, so we'll make sure that goes out on the Twitter then. We'll make sure that club cricket egos, the fancy Dans, the know-it-alls, the hooray Henrys, the one who wants to give it large on a Saturday afternoon, we'll make sure they try and go in the bin for you.
Yeah.
And a big thank you for coming on, Dan. Thanks for giving up your time.
No problem at all. Appreciate you asking.
Provisionally, let me get this right, Sunday the 29th, provisionally.
Yeah, Sunday the 29th, normally starts.
Is allowing.
Yeah, hopefully we'll go ahead with it, whatever happens, and we'll just, whoever's there is there. But yeah, normally start around 10, 10:30, and yeah, come and support us if you can.
Brilliant, so 29th, Sunday the 29th. Might be a game of cricket on if we're lucky as well. There will be a game of cricket on, but just depends on what game of cricket is that we're all watching. Go get yourself a raffle ticket. Go get yourself involved in the auction for a great cause and a great day. Big thanks to everyone at Woodstock for the support. Remember, go and use the voucher code, officially the best kit on the market. You can still buy a bat sticker off us if you want to donate through the podcast. I know we're giving some away to Cavaswall Cricket Club, or I am giving some away to Cavaswall Cricket Club on the weekend. First time to catch up with them. And other than that, wish everyone the best. Turner, thank you very much for your time and letting me lead this week. Hope you've had a nice rest, mate.
My vocal cords are well rested, mate. I'm like a doll now, honest.
I'll be getting messages about the sound of my voice all week now. Dan, thanks again, mate. Thanks for being the more decisive of the Hancock brothers. Might not be more ruthless, but definitely the more decisive. I nearly said divisive then, but there's definitely divisiveness. Decisive. So appreciate your time, mate.
No, thanks. Thanks for having me on, gents. Really appreciate it.
All right. And thank you, everyone, for your time. Make sure you subscribe. Spotify, Apple Music, whatever it is. Subscribe, share, like. And we look forward to talking about the second test next week. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Looking for a new cricket equipment partner for yourself or your club can sometimes be tricky. With so many options to choose from, how do you make the right choice? When you want quality, value and service, there really is only one place to start. For more than a decade, Woodstock Cricket have been producing award-winning, high-performance cricket bats from their Shropshire workshop. Matched with their classy soft goods, luggage and accessories, Woodstock Cricket really do tick all the boxes. Get in touch with Woodstock Cricket and find out why many loyal clubs, players and international customers can't be wrong at info@woodstockcricket.co.uk.
Down at Third Man, the cricket podcast, proudly supported by Woodstock Cricket.